Conscious Living and Power Radio. It's time to get into dreams. Hi there, I'm Wendy Garrett. My guest is Rad Owl. You might know him. He's the Reddit.com dream expert. We've talked to him before. J.M. DeBoard. And also today, since we're talking dreams and everybody has them, Matt, my producer, is going to be our guinea pig and supply us with a dream because it's really cool and it revolves around all the things we were talking about before we started the show. So it's like, well, why not introduce this? First, hey, J.M. DeBoard, welcome.
Hi, Wendy Garrett. Thank you. It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, I like following your stuff on Twitter, and there's a movie there that I watched. I was going to talk about it, but I've watched it so long ago, I'm like, shoot, I'm going to have to go back and look at it again, so we can't do that one. However, before we were connected with you, Matt and I were talking about coffee, and I was bragging about my chocolate raspberry coffee that I lost and then found again, and he was upset because he'd only had coffee earlier and now was jonesing, or whatever you want to call it, coffee impaired. So, and yet, he's very confident he can run the show, all right? So, but I thought, well, this is perfect because as he talked, you came up with another angle. So let's go ahead and get this going. First, Matt, yes. share your dream, and then JM will give us an idea of where what we can do with this kind of dream.
Okay, but first, my goal in life is to be fully caffeinated by noon, and
okay,
it's priorities. It's almost there. So yeah, no, I was we were talking about coffee, and I had this deja vu while we were talking about it, and it was more of a deja vu than a dream. I don't know if Jason said or JM was talking about it's something that reminded you of a dream. So I'm supposed to go see the Joker movie later on with the girlfriend, and the whole coffee conversation kind of made me have a deja vu, and sometimes I can't tell if those are good things or bad things. We'll just have to see how the day goes.
That's not fair.
Deja vu.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, deja vus can be, there are different reasons why you can have them. And one of them is because you can remember a dream because you were living in the moment of time that the dream previewed. It could be something as simple as a conversation that you're having with someone, up through something that looks familiar about a place you've walked into and you've never been there before, or something, it's, people have had deja vus of all kinds of like different types. Sometimes it's triggered by cross-wired memory that's not, it's close, but it's no cigar, but all of a sudden it's kind of like that magnetic attraction when it gets, the memories are close enough to each other, they in the mind. Mm-hmm. And that can be one reason for deja vu. And I've seen that in the medical literature. But I also know from Dr. Art Funkhauser. He is at the Jungian Institute in Zurich. He's an instructor there. And he has a website, Deja Vu Research. And when you look into this, it turns out there's like 12 different words for the phenomenon of deja vu.
Yeah.
And one of them is dreaming. It's deja rev, which is already dreamed, is what it means. And it means that you can dream about things that will happen in the future. And deja vu, that feeling of deja vu, is how you can get a clue that that is what's happening, that the moment of time that you are living in right now was previewed for a dream, by a dream, which means that there's some kind of significance to it. Not that it could be, world-changing significance, mm-hmm. but that there could be something significant that is going on inside of you at that moment. So Matt and Wendy, that's how I use deja vu, that feeling of a deja vu that says, tune in especially closely to this moment.
Yeah.
Pay attention to what is going through your mind and what you are feeling right now, because there's something more. You are just kind of going along, like Matt, you're being the producer of the show and you're just kind of going along doing your, living your life, doing your job. And then all of a sudden it's like, ooh, I feel tingly. Something about this is eerily familiar. And what I do is I take that as a moment to say, let me tune into what is going on inside of me, but also in my interaction, like if I'm talking with someone, because there might be a little more that can be kind of uncovered, and there might be more depth that can be brought out if I will just pay a little more attention to what's going on.
Go ahead.
Every time I have a deja vu, it's accompanied by a feeling. It's not just the deja vu, it's the deja vu, and it's like, okay, this is going to go well, or or it's not going to go well, or you know what I mean? Like it's always accompanied by something extra.
Well, hopefully your deja vu, as we were just starting to talk, means that this is going to be a fabulous interview and there's going to be lots of people out there who are going to get a lot out of this conversation that we're about to have.
And it's coffee. The coffee thing. You know what?
And it always calls around coffee.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but that's also a wake-up call. A coffee is a wake-up call. So at least that's how I use it. It's like, okay, wake up and smell the coffee. What's going on? You know, so something is important that you're triggering here.
And, you know, sometimes as a dream symbol, it can also, coffee can be associated with like thoughts, ideas, productivity, stuff like that. People will dream about coffee. And because of its association in our minds with being kind of zoned into your work and feeling in a high energy level state, coffee as a dream symbol has become associated with that state of mind.
Okay. Hey, Matt, thank you. Thank you for being the guinea pig. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right. Yeah. See, he was like, okay, this coffee thing means something. Well, that's why I wanted to get into this too. And I also, as you guys were talking, went into that website you were talking about. And anybody who has any kind of experience with deja vu is invited to participate in the research so we can find out more about it. I also wanted to mention that with the dreams we're talking about, this time of year, you talk about deceased and dead people showing up in dreams. And we're walking through the house with me. Are you walking around, JM?
Are you hearing me? Yes, I am. I just want to get more coffee.
Yeah. Hopefully Matt's going to really like that. You're not helping.
Okay, I'm back. I got my coffee now, my second cup.
Okay, good. So that's what those headphones do. They magnify everything in the background, just in case, you know, anybody ever wants to know what happens. We've got the whole, it's like, whoa, sound of falling. Anyway, so just, it's like you opened a paper bag. Okay. With all of this stuff, we're getting, Matt, just let me know. He'll fix it later. That's a miracle worker. So here we go. With all this stuff this time of year triggering that kind of stuff, do people have more dreams? This, you know, given that there's a consensus reality and people are tuned into zombies and the dead zone and all that this time of year, it's so popular. Does that trigger things like that?
I have dead found dreams? That, yeah, it's to a certain extent, you know, I have found that some of these pop culture or just common culture references, like we're going into the Halloween season now and you might see an uptick. You know, I'm a moderator at Reddit.com at Reddit Dreams. I've been there for years. And so I see a lot of what people are dreaming because they come to that forum to share their dreams. And I have noticed certain seasonal upticks. And it's sometimes it's related to the content that you find, like, okay, Halloween, what could people be dreaming about, you know, ghosts, witches, zombies, things like that. But what I found is that it's more associated with shows like The Walking Dead. The uptick in the numbers of dreams related to zombies when that show, I mean, I can't show it statistically and say, you know, the show aired on Sunday night and people came in on Monday reporting more zombie dreams. But what I can say is that when that show was at its peak and it was really being talked about a lot in popular culture and people, of course, were tuning into it, say season 4, season 5, when it really reached its peak, then that's when you were seeing a lot more zombie dreams. And then we have Christmas coming up and you have family holidays. And Wendy, I tell you, you know, I can come into Reddit and I'll see something where somebody has a crazy dream about, and it starts featuring something related to family, you know, their childhood home, their mom and dad, distant relatives, having a big family dinner, that kind of thing. And I'll start asking them questions related to, oh, so did you go visit your folks for the holidays? And they'll say, yeah. And I'll say, well, how did that go? And I'll look for ways that it's reflected in the dream content, because it often is. Like the guy who had the dream that there was a gorilla on top of his aunt's roof who was acting like a gorilla, like really, you know, just tearing the house apart and acting, you know, primitive and all that. Uh-huh. And I said, you know, you just went through this holiday experience. It was just after Thanksgiving. And I said, you know, was there anybody at your holiday who acted like a big ape? And he said, yeah, my uncle, you know, drank too much and then started spouting off and, you know, acting drunk. And so the dream takes his uncle and turns him into a gorilla and puts him up on top of his aunt's roof, which is the setting where the family occasion took place. And had him act out, you know, like a gorilla. So in a way, it's imaginative, but what you're seeing are little elements of reality, of what I should say, waking reality. There are little fragments of the person's recent memories that have now been pulled into the dream, but the dream takes it and turns it into this very imaginary and very poignant story.
What I think about that, I mean, that's really obvious. That's so in classic, those metaphors are right on. Sometimes it's more subtle than that. And that's like what Matt was saying. You can't tell the difference sometimes between the deja vu and whether it means something or it's just innocuous. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think in our conversation here, what a lot of this is going to come down to is practice and experience. Once you have experienced deja vus a few times and seen how they correlated with what's going on in your waking life. You know, our mutual friend on Twitter, Ian Wilson, had a sort of like a deja vu where he lived through the experience of first dreaming about a tragic car wreck on an icy road that took his life. And then he responded because he'd had a lot of experience with dreams, and he went, there is something more about this. It's not just the fact that I live in Canada and it's always snowy, and he had regular snow tires, but he went out mm-hmm. and he bought the super studded deluxe snow tires. And then very soon after, his waking life played out just like in the dream. He's coming up to the intersection. He steps on his brakes to slow down. There's black ice underneath the snow. He skids yeah. into the intersection. He looks over to his left. The big truck is barreling down on him. His daughter is in the passenger seat on the right. His life is flashing before his eyes. Waking life played out just like in the dream, except Ian had responded to the dream by getting the snow tires on his car, and it gripped into the icy stuff on the road just enough to slow his car down that the big truck flew through the intersection and just missed the front of his car, whereas in the dream, it T-boned him. So wow. You get an experience with this, Wendy, where you have, you know, just from like there is something more to this dream, and I don't, you know, It's hard to tell people yeah. Exactly what to look for. Now, I have I do have some things for precognitive dreams and stuff. I've been forced to learn, not forced, but because I do a lot of media appearances and stuff, and I come on and I want to talk about Carl Jung and I want to talk about dream interpretation and people go to come up and they go, why did I dream about my deceased aunt? You know, or why did yes. my deceased yes. grandma come to me in a dream? Why do I keep getting these feelings of deja vu? And then my life plays out like in my dreams, like, am I going crazy? Am I psychic? Am I? Mm-hmm. And so people would hit me with these questions and I had to dig into this to find out everything about it that I could. And ultimately, Wendy, in the end, it's familiarity. You need to work with and pay enough attention to your dreams so that the ones that are extraordinary will stick out to you, and you'll be able to discern it through your intuition and feelings.
For mine, that's what a long time ago, I remember I had been working with my own dreams and identifying what my symbols meant for me and how that yeah. indicated what I was working with. And so I was going, and then I also had guides who were giving me information and then my little assistants on the other side or outside or, you know, right beside me that you can't see. And what yes. the suggestion was that had to do with a lot more of this is created, manifested. And so if I experienced something happening in the dream plane, mm-hmm. I could shift it there before it manifested. And so I didn't have to go through whatever whatever was playing out in the dream plane, or I was shown this is going to happen and you can either change it or not. And I learned, like with jobs, that they would give me a little thing of who was going to be coming into the picture and how that might change my situation or scenario, or how I could go in and fix something that wasn't working at that time and either, you know, respond better to the person in the dream or in some way shift my behavior. That was what it's always about, is how can I shift to make this flow improve one way or the other? That isn't always addressed in the dream. But the manifesting for me has been really important, and I learned that working with my dreams.
And there are two kind of layers of processes that are going on while you're dreaming. And one of them, I think, is very conventional and easy to understand, which is that the subconscious parts of your mind have the ability to see where things are headed. It can identify patterns. It's very good at stepping back and seeing the big picture. So of course, when you go to sleep and your senses are turned off and you're dreaming, that part of your mind has the opportunity to kind of fill in the blanks for you or paint that picture to point you towards things. It's like, well, hey, I know that my performance has been dropping at work. Would it be any big surprise if I go in tomorrow or, you know, sometime in the next week and, you know, have the boss confronts me about something? Let's just use that as kind of a, you know, generic example. You often know where things are going. I've seen this a lot with relationships. People have a very deep radar for things that are emotionally close to them. And when you're in a relationship and you get that subtle feeling like, man, something's not right here, you know, and then it'll either manifest as a dream or as something that's going on in your life, and you can see where things are headed. But Wendy, there's another side of this, which I've come to this conclusion after many years of seeing what you just described, that you have an opportunity while you are in your dream state to make decisions about what is going to manifest in your life or not manifest. You can avoid outcomes that you see in your dreams if you want to, or you can affirm the things that you see in your dreams. You say, yes, I really love how that dream showed me in my life or showed, you know, someone who's close to me, and the way that the dream went down, it looked really good to me. I really like what the dream showed for this other person or for us or whatever. You are actually manifesting. You're choosing from among all of the probabilities for your future, and you have an opportunity to preview them in the dream state. So there is powerful, powerful, potent manifesting that's going on. You are actually connected in while you were dreaming and a sort of like plugged in, like Neo in the Matrix. You are now plugged in to the creative power of the universe at the quantum level where everything exists as probability. Your dreaming mind can help you decide among the probabilities for your future, and you can actually choose them in the dream state, and you can alter them in the dream state. Sometimes I do it after I wake up, just by working with the dream imagery and saying, I like that, or I don't like that, or let's see where this was going. I don't have to be dreaming anymore to be able to tap into that creative power. But for most people, their dreams are the introduction to it. And man, if you want to talk about ability to manifest, Wendy, start with your dreams, because it gives you the basic material to work with. And then from there, you can take the next steps in learning how to truly manifest everything that you want in your life.
Okay, if you're listening, my guest again is J.M. DeBoard, and the owl is Rad Owl on Reddit, the Dream Interpreter, and jmdeboard.com, the website. I wanted to ask, for one thing, this goes back to the dead people in dreams, and I have to be really careful what I tune my attention to, because I'm in between a lot of times. I was reading about Alex Tanis. He's a fantastic psychic. They did research with him. He may be under the radar for a lot of people, but there are some books now reviving how incredible his abilities were. And as I was reading through the research, and I don't know what happened, how it triggered, but I was really in some way, shape, or form enmeshed and engrossed in his work. And during that time, I had a dream that he came up to me, and I've had these kinds of dreams before and changed my life as a result, but this one was different. He came up to me, arrived in a black car, walks directly to me, looks exactly like, and I hadn't really paid attention to how he looked, but then all of a sudden I'm like, this is what he looks like in real life. And later on I saw a video with his face, and sure enough, everything fit. He comes up, and in one hand he gives me a celery stalk, the kind that you've just started, it's beginning to grow from the bottom of the stalk that you've cut off. So he gives me that. And at one point I had that picture on my Google image before they got rid of that. And then the other one was a small box, a present with a bow. So it's one hand I've got that living celery, and the other one I have this little present, this gift. He smiles, this huge smile, and walks off. And this is how my guides work. They also do this kind of stuff. Give me a cone, you know, a puzzle. You have to figure this out for yourself. So that I thought, okay, this is a way of dealing with someone who is no longer dead. He's, to me, living on another plane. The guy isn't dead. He said, I know you're checking this out. Here's something to work with. I'm giving you an opportunity. All right. And so that's what I'm giving you to say. Where do we go with that?
Wow. And the celery was in the left hand. Is that, that's how I'm picturing it. The presence was in the right hand and the celery was in the left.
I believe the celery was actually in the right hand because it's material. My memory is that it was material.
Okay.
Where the other was potential because it was in the left hand. Though the spirit, the left is, you know, that's my hand. That's the spirit plane. Whenever I step out of my body, I step to the right because that's the manifest plane. I'm not, you know, going the other direction just yet. So, and that's what, you know, that's how I've been trained. You know, step out to the right and the left is later. Okay. And so, So the celery is a living being, and that entity is in the right hand and the other's in the left. Okay.
Well, let's just talk about the fact that Alex came to you in a dream and it was very vivid. You had a sense of a presence of another person. It wasn't, you see, here's where that experience with dreams we were talking about before with deja vu, you also need it with experiences like what you just had, because it would be very easy for someone to say, it was the ghost of Alex that came to me in a dream, you know, and you go, I did feel a presence of a person, but let's not call him a ghost because that implies something that he's not, you know, he came to you as a living being who had these presence for you and was able to show you things that are going to be, are happening and are going to be happening in your life. This is very commonly reported among people who have psychic abilities, shamans, healers, naturopaths. I've heard about there was a surgeon who would have dreams where great surgeons from the past would come to him and teach him things. It improved his ability as a surgeon. You could talk to, say, someone like Dr. Evan Alexander, who had the near-death experience, which has really kind of rocked the medical world because there's very thorough medical documentation of his experience. And the old paradigm that when you see the light and you're near death, it's just because your brain is spazzing out, right? And he goes, no, there was no brain activity. I was gone. But I had this very, very vivid experience. So the point of bringing all of this in, Wendy, is that you can be visited while you are in a dream state by, in fact, it's kind of like plugging in to the broader communication network that is all of us. You know, while we're awake and we're going about our daily life, it's very easy to feel alone and isolated, or at least not plugged in, you know, like that you have, you are just this distinct being who can keep the world and everything else out if you want to. But when you get into a dream state, you are plugging into everyone and everything that has ever existed. Dr. Carl Jung's collective unconscious is based off of this idea that there is a collective mind that is a database for all of the experiences and all of the memories of all of the humans who have ever lived. That is the collective unconscious. And among Jungians, it is accepted as a matter of fact. So when you go to sleep, you are actually sometimes connecting into this broader network. And I think it includes the intelligences and the presences of people who are alive and dead. I used to think that a lot of those dreams were just sort of misinterpreted, Wendy, because I come at this as a background, as a conventional, you know, from conventional schools of dream interpretation. And what I found out through personal experience is that we have dreaming is not monolithic. Dreaming is a range of phenomena. There are a range of experiences that you can have, from simple memory processing through having deeply metaphorical dreams that are helping you to process your life and adjust and adapt to circumstances, to something like what you just described, where plugged into something greater.
We got to take a break. Okay, so hang on. My guest again, okay. J.M. DeBoard with Dream Interpretation. We're going to come back. It's Conscious Living on Empower Radio.
To thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
If a disaster struck right now, what would you and your family do first? Would your kids know what to do? How would you get in touch with them if you're separated and your cell phone isn't working? Don't wait until a disaster strikes to figure it out. It's your responsibility to make a plan for you and your family ahead of time. To learn how, take our readiness challenge at nyc.gov/readynewyork or call 311 for information. Brought to you by the New York City Office of Emergency Management and the Ad Council.
Come alive with the forest. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a forest near you. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
My name is Mira. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way to make the community stronger. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Conscious Living, Empower Radio. Okay, now remember, when we're talking to Rad Al, we can hear everything in his room. So you can imagine what he might be up to. I'm assuming he went to get more coffee because, you know, that would just drive Matt crazy. And then I didn't. So mine's getting cold. Yeah, just a reminder that there's all sorts of real life happening as we talk. And that's what I like about. I love this. That's the thing that you get with podcasting, you don't get other places. So, all right. Now you were talking about how the Jungian perspective makes sense in conjunction with the other dreams, because that was my problem with dream books. I could deal with the symbols, and I work with symbols a lot, and I learned to make them my own. But what happened when I was having my prophetic, my visions, my deja vu from my higher self and the others that I work with, they were getting images and messages to me, and none of those came in when it came to a dream book. So I had to get rid of them. And that's what I'm hoping, you know, with you dealing with this in a different way, from a different perspective, it adds that element that oftentimes isn't there.
Well, there are two things that I advise to people who are in a situation that are similar, you know, similar to yours. And I know a lot of them are listening right now. And so tune in, because this is the best advice that I can give you as someone who's worked with dreams for 25 years now. And I've gone at it from both perspectives, from both the traditional side and let's just call it the non-traditional side, which is, one, you want to learn as much as you can about symbols and symbolism, because not only do ordinary dreams speak to you with symbols, you also get spoken to by figures such as Alex Tanis, who came to you with a celery stalk, you know, like, but it's new, it's growing out of an old thing that was there. And I've done this before with romaine lettuce, where you take the stalk, you put it in, you know, you eat most of it, but you leave that little bit left, and then you put it into some water and it grows again. So there is something, you know, new growing out of the old. There is a very potent symbol there. It's also alive. life. I mean, the dream could have showed you as like a phoenix rising out of the ashes or something, but no, that doesn't fit your circumstances. You know, when you see that thing that Alex handed to you, that growing, that new piece of celery growing out of the old, there is tons of information that is packed into that symbol. You, if by focusing on it, that information starts unpacking. It's data. It's gigabytes of data that is layered into that image. And it goes everything from, you know, situational dynamics to very deeply personal dynamics. And those personal dynamics go into emotional, mental, spiritual, psychic. So Wendy, on the one side, you need to understand the conventional side of dreams, and you digging into the dream books probably gave you at least enough information so that when you had these more extraordinary experiences, that you were able to differentiate. You know, you weren't going to be able to find the answers from the dream books, but just the fact that you had been working with your dreams for a while and you had that basic training in symbols helped you to understand when Alex came to you and gave you the gift, you know, and that one was coming in from the left and the other's coming in from the right. You go, oh, well, I understand this because I have experience with it now. And that's the best, you know, experience is the best teacher, of course. But this also teaches us that you're not going to find most of your answers in dream books. And I say this as an author of 3 books about dreams. But I honestly, Rad Al's Crash Course in Dream Interpretation in 2 hours and for $5, that's what the Kindle book is on, you know, on Amazon. And Rad Al's Crash Course in Dream Interpretation, I can take you through the basic training that you need. I can give you the basic facts that you need about dreams, even if you're starting from basically zero, and then get you to the point where you can at least start to interpret your own dreams. And as you get into that, and I say interpret, but maybe examine is a better word, you know, because that's really what you're doing. And then, Wendy, then when you have that experience, that basic training, you can start to dig in and go, well, you know, if I had a dream that my deceased grandma was there, you know, does it mean that her spirit is visiting me? Or am I within the sphere of influence of the great mother? You know, like there is a mother archetype deep within us. And I say the great mother, and it's just a term used from, you know, sort of mythopoetic traditions. But there is this sphere of influence that could come from the maternal side of your family. It could come from larger idea of the mother and how she influences you. And I mean the mother, you know, the bigger idea of this, the archetypal idea. Or was it really her spirit that came to you? There are ways of being able to tell the difference, but they're very subtle. And you have to have experience to be able to work through those subtleties.
Okay, let me give you an example. This dream, and the reason I brought it up with Alex Tanis, is a larger than life dream. And it's completely out of the box when it comes to a message from the spirit plane where I also work. And so for that, it wasn't a one moment, one size fits all. It was something I had to work with, a cone. And that was, it was intentional. That's why he gave that big smile of ha ha ha. Okay. So when I work with it, there were so many interpretations. It drove me nuts for a while, like the little the monkey with his hand in the cookie jar trying to get the cookie out, knowing it's there and just not figuring, how do I get it out? Okay, what I do is I take my hand out, turn the jar upside down, dump it over. Yay! All right, so with this, I knew the rebirth. That was a rebirth from the old manifests the new. So as you recreate yourself, I'm manifesting on the physical plane, creating something out of everything that's already present. But what I also have access to are the gifts of potential, where you're constantly given spirit guidance, spirit, and all of that is in the present. There's no reason to unwrap it because each time it's different. So it's there saying the potential of that, that everlasting, ongoing, always available presence, presence as in TS and presence. Those two words I always work with doubles. And so that's always there accompanying me as I'm manifesting and creating my reality on the, on this plane. And so it was that constant. And then today, with the added addition of the wake up and smell the coffee, with the three of us having this coffee connection of Trinity, then is, for me, an awesome time to come back and bring this to you and say, look, here's what it is, and say dreams aren't always about what's happening just overnight or in the job or in the relationship. They're about we as spirit souls and creators, what we're doing. And sometimes we're able to get these benefits of saying, all right, where is the bigger picture? What's going on? And for me, that is the gift that keeps on giving. And that's how I end up with it. But it again, it's something I worked to bring into my reality and how it works for me. And that's what I think with your dreaming, giving people symbols and situations and hearing how other people made sense of their own dreams helps us all.
Yes, and understanding the metaphors that are present. Dreams like to use visual metaphors, and they're often found in our figures of speech. So what you just said, the gift that keeps on giving, you have a gift, a present in one hand, and you have a thing that is recreating itself, the celery growing out of the old, you know, foundation. It's continuing. It's a gift that keeps on giving, because mm-hmm. the celery is going to continue to grow. And just to be, I want to repeat this for your audience, is that dreaming is a range of phenomenon, and it goes from the conventional memory processing and, you know, very personal stuff that's going on, situational and personal dynamics. But there's also a deeper layer of dreaming when we plug into the collective, and that is the collective meaning all of us as human beings. It is collective meaning not only the humans who are alive now, but all humans who have ever been alive. At least the memories of them are stored in the collective unconscious. And then there's also a larger collective, which is the universe, which contains a lot more than just us, you know, and we can actually plug into that while we are dreaming. Because I think that we're able to do this all the time, Wendy, that it's a natural faculty. But what happens when we're awake is that most of our attention is being consumed by processing our physical senses. You know, more than 50% of your brain power is used just to process visual imagery, and about 95% or more of the sensory information that you take in is actually filtered out so that you can exist moment to moments without blowing a fuse, because potentially you take in so much sensory information. So what neuroscientists have said is that most of what you're taking in is filtered out. That not filtered out, but you're just not processing it because there's too much to process. But then, Wendy, you go to sleep, and what happens? Your brain is freed up.
Yeah.
And when
refresh.
You go into REM. Yeah. Well, and it's freed up. It's refreshed. So you have a chance to rest, for one. For two, you don't need to process all that sensory information. So now the entire focus of all that incredible, amazing computing power, awareness power of your brain can now be focused internally. And then you go into a state, when you go into REM stage sleep, did you know, Wendy, that your brain is just as active as when you are awake and focused on something, like, say, taking a test? You have somebody who's really focused on taking a test. You can take a brain scan, and you can see all these areas of their brain lighting up, like really energetic. When you go into REM stage, what happens is that your brain wakes up, but your body stays asleep. So now use that as sort of the metaphor for us to march forward here. It's the idea is that you are able to give your full attention and focus and energy to something other than the sensory experience of life. And what does that mean? That means the intuitive experience of life, the deeper psychic experience of life, the collective experience of life. And you go into these altered states of consciousness that you are capable of doing while you are awake, of course. You've done it probably through meditations and stuff like that, where you can go really deep and you start, you know, try Bob Monroe's, Gateway series sometimes, and you're, you know, hooked into those binaural beats for, you know, about half an hour, and you start leaving your body, you know, like,
okay, wait,
you
wait,
can
wait, wait,
do
wait,
these
wait.
Things while you're awake, but it's easier to do while you're asleep.
Let me tell you that, because when I was working with the Monroe Institute and getting some information from the PR person on doing the shows and doing, I said, okay, I want to start where somebody would start, you know, from scratch. And so the first one is the introduction to Bob Monroe. When I did that very first, I think it's like half an hour, 45 minute session, and I'm in my living room on the couch, and I'm going through the whole program, the process, and I felt like, well, somebody stepped into the room, and I could feel the physical presence of someone standing beside me. And I thought, okay. And then he said it was time to wake up. And I thought, and so for me, his impression is imprinted in that program. So you
it is.
That.
God.
And I was like, wow, this is so amazing. Because I felt the whole nine yards, it was like a template had been created with when they did that program.
Okay,
so those things
people,
for me are real.
For people who maybe don't, let's give them a little bit of background here. Bob Monroe wrote the book Journeys Out of Body. Bob was the owner of a series of chain of radio stations. He was involved in production of radio programs for many decades. He was a very successful businessman. He started having out-of-body experiences, and he explored this out of personal interest and also because he felt like he was advancing our collective knowledge. So Bob created a series of recordings in his home recording studio, and it's called the Gateway Series. And it's six CDs worth of audio. Each one is about a half an hour, maybe a little longer. There were 20 or 25 of them. And yes, Wendy, I've experienced that too. Bob walks into the room. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever experienced, but you get very deep into it and you feel him there. He has continued to be a voice in my head. Bob has this wonderful voice. I love listening to him talk, and it's very resonant. It's a little bit grandfatherly. He has imprinted himself into that, even though Bob has journeyed out of his body for good. You know, he's no longer with us in the living. He lived in to be into his 90s. But he is still a living presence and part of us. His, like Alex, when he came to you in the dream, these people can be drawn upon at any time once you've connected into them through their work. I feel like I'm connected in with Carl Jung. You know, I'm the moderator of the Carl Jung Forum, and there are times that people have come in there and they've asked for a Jungian interpretation of the dream. And I'm sitting there in front of my computer and I'm scratching my head going, I don't know, you know, and then I go, okay, Carl is in me. I've read so much of his work. What do you have to say about this? And next thing I know, my hands are on the keyboard and I'm saying things that I didn't know that I had within me to say, you know, and it's like I'm channeling him through me. But what you did, Wendy, was you're feeling Bob in a very deep and personal way while you were listening to his audio recordings. And I've experienced that too. And I think it teaches us that everything and everyone and everything is imprinted on the fabric of time and space. We've learned this from quantum physics, that time and space is a recording media. It's the hard drive for everything. Everything that we experience is recorded as data in that thing, whatever it is, the fabric of time and space. It's a recording media and it's accessible to anyone. Some people call it the Akashic Records. You know, it's all of that experience of everyone who's ever lived, including the presence of that person or those people, is imprinted into the fabric of space and time. And we all, as points of awareness and as consciousness, have the ability to be able to tap into it. And dreams, of course, are a very easy way, or it, for a lot of people, it's their introduction to this. And once you've been introduced to it, when you have an experience like you did, where Bob walks into the room, you go, oh, this is normal. It's okay. As opposed to other people who would be grabbing the cross off of the wall and calling the priest, you know, because they think that there's something that's very abnormal about it.
Well, that can be frightening. I mean, there's part of this, and that's one of the things that spirit guides that I work with have said we have to get past, because it's in us. It's in our nature as beings who are built to survive. The first thing we have is that fight or flight response, and that happens when we're introduced to something that's so far outside of our comfort zone. And let me reference Ingo Swann. Somebody, I don't know who, and I'm so grateful, sent me the upgraded the Penetration Special Edition. I had the book, but I downloaded it when it was available for free on the internet, so I've got it in paper form. This is a new one. It includes a new chapter, chapter 9, talking about some stuff that he had for Mars visuals that he had from Mars, but it also includes when he had that UFO, some secret secret someone took him and explained to him certain things that were going on, and then they also took him to meet a UFO. When he goes to meet this UFO, which he doesn't know that this is going to happen, they take him out to a field. They say, we're waiting for something. Okay, fine, he's here waiting for something. And then this UFO, and I read John Foster's book. John Foster is an experiencer. He's in his 80s now. He wrote things that he didn't remember until he was in his 50s, which then gave him 3 heart attacks because it was so mind-shattering. And goes out in this field, in this wilderness, and it happens to be Alaska. He's out there, and all of a sudden, out of the ether, out of the air, he starts seeing this thing manifest. Not only is it pyramid, it's diamond. Nothing like he's ever read about, learned about, known about on the corporeal level. And he's the word is gobsmacked. And they're standing there, and he's like his mind is fried. Okay. And so after this happens, and they've all recovered, and they've all run for cover, you'll have to read the book yourself. He said, well, what sense did you get? And Ingo said, okay, fine. You just completely corrupted the hard drive. I can't tell you. I have to go back. They said, well, this is the end of my time with the program. We can't go back. But what he said was, if you're going to ask me to do something, when we do the remote viewings, what we do is we give them, this is what a nuclear reactor looks like, so that they have a frame of reference. And then they can say, well, this is where I saw it. This is where they are. Instead, you didn't give me any diagrams, any potential of having a way to integrate this. You just completely fried my hard drive. Okay, so I can't give you nothing until I know more. That's what we're dealing with dreams. And the same thing. If it's the first time and the first impression, your mind is going to go, okay? And once you get past that, then you can start working with it, and that's the fear. That's the unknown, and that's normal. That's completely normal. And so that's what some of this addresses, that it's frightened the first time. It's okay to feel uncomfortable. That's a safety net. And you either step back and say, I'm not going to go there, or you say, let me work with this. Let me give me a chance to recover and get my wits about me, and then I'll explore more. That's safety, and that keeps us on some level consciously aware and sane. Does that make sense?
It sure does. And I'm really glad you brought this up, Wendy, because we jumped right into the deep end with this conversation. And I'm picturing this from the perspective of people who maybe don't have the same experience as us, but they're listening to your show because they're curious about these things. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, the deceased presence, you know, the spirit of Bob Monroe walking into the room while you're, you know, doing his binaural beats program, you know, his gateway experience, there's a lot of people who might say, oh, no, I'm not ready for that at all. And that's fine. And your dreams are your virtual reality practice space. Okay. This happens conventionally. It's been proven through the study of dreams, especially through the field of neuroscience, that a lot of what you're doing while you're dreaming is actually rehearsing and testing. There are theories about dreaming, such as the threat rehearsal theory, that are very widely accepted, especially in fields such as evolutionary biology, that says that your dreams evolved and us as a species to be able to help us to adapt to our environment and increase our odds of survival. And we know, when you talk about it in those terms, evolutionary biologists say, yes, you're singing my song now. Well, let's take that and apply it to other things. There is more than just survival, you know, of in a physical sort of way. There's also survival in an emotional and psychological sort of way. And here's where we delve into Carl Jung, who said that it's very well known that, you know, we have this innate ability to be able to sense deeper things. I've experienced it. I know a lot of other people who experience it, and I'm speaking from Carl's perspective here. He experienced it. And what he said is that this is not something to be freaked out about. It's not like, you know, let's put on the tinfoil hat and talk to the little green guys. You know, this is something that we've adapted because it increases our odds of survival. And there are deeper senses in the nervous system that help us to perceive these things that are coming up. Now we tie back in with Matt's deja vu. Deja vu gives you the ability sometimes to be able to know just ahead of time that there is something important coming up. So wake your butt up and pay attention right now. Now, this moment in time is really coming into sharp focus, and it might be something internal inside of you. It might be something external, but
there's a reason why you're getting this little jog, this little jolt, this thing that says pay closer attention. So now we're going into what Carl Jung said is a very natural faculty. It's just that our nervous system has these deeper faculties and senses and perceptions that have been attuned to this, but it's not part of the five senses, so we don't understand it very well. Well, now we get into what Ingo Swann said, which is that we have these layers and layers and layers of perception that are us as a conscious aware being. At this point in space and time, you are this aware, you are this point of perception. And what Ingo said when he would do remote viewing is that there was something deeper going on as he, you know, that when he would remote view, what he was doing was basically just shifting his perception. And he was able to pull things in that were information that he would not be able to get otherwise. So this is what's happening. And in a dream state, it can help you to practice and prepare for it. Use your dreams as the virtual reality state that they can be. And if you really want to go deeper with this, if there's anyone out there who wants to experience the stuff for themselves, and there's a lot of information about lucid dreaming, I would point you towards Robert Wagner. The ability to be able to create a state where you can get lucid during a dream and you can maintain, you can stabilize the dream, the lucid dream state. There are things that you do in your waking life that Robert teaches you to do, and also Stephen LaBerge, that those skills of awareness, of centering, will help you in the lucid dream state, and then that will help you in the states beyond that, because you're getting your basic training in the dream state, but you're also doing it while you're awake by breathing techniques, for example, centering, paying attention to what your senses are telling you. And there are times during the day, Wendy, when I just stop and I go, what am I hearing? Oh, wait, there's that bird over there. I wasn't here. You know, the bird's been chattering for minutes, but my brain was somewhere else. And I go, oh, wow, there's that bird over there. And, oh, did anybody hear the chipmunk? You know, I live in the desert here in Tucson. So, you know, we've got this, we're kind of in a rural, not rural, but, you know, we've got a lot of acreage around us. So there's all this wildlife and I miss it a lot of times. You're getting this basic training. The point is, Wendy, I'm going off in different directions, but that you can learn through basic training for lucid dreaming, and it will take you into the basic training for other things that might be able to come your way, and you won't get more than what you're ready for. There are safeguards for these processes. You need to confront your fears. You need to be able to overcome your fears. You need to be ready to have experiences like Ingo did, where something might just manifest out of the blue and it might be fantastic, but you're not going to get more than what you're ready for. Now, Ingo got a little bit more, but they forced it on him. They forced the experience on him, but there are safeguards for this, and your dreaming mind is very adept at knowing what you're ready for and pushing you out of your comfort zone, but not pushing you into, you know, the hard drive just blew up.
Okay, we're going to do jmdebord.com. So jmdebord.com to check in and find out more information. I want to leave with a cartoon of, you know, it's literal and sometimes it isn't. And this is one of the ones that I think is fantastic because it addresses that deja vu versus literal information and paying attention. There's two monks standing alongside of the road. Maybe you've seen this cartoon. And the two monks are standing alongside of the road. The guy's going by and it says the end is near. And it's like, you know, I've seen this before. These monks are just really, they're persistent with this message because there's like two or three versions of the monks. Here's one, the end is near, the end is near, the end is near. And at the third point, the guy's still going around the curve and that's where the mountain ends.
So, you know, read it as the metaphor or read it as the literal, you know, you're at the end of the road here, you know.
Dude, pause, take a chill pill, quit going forward, that kind of thing. Yes, it's like
you will get
make a difference.
Yeah. And your dreams are the basic training ground for this, and they can see around the corner and know what's coming up in your life. There's a conventional way of explaining it. There's unconventional ways of explaining it. Either way, it behooves you to tune into this because it increases your odds of survival. It also increases your quality of life because you can now start to make decisions to manifest the things in your life that you want to happen. You can use the dream imagery as a basic sort of fodder to work with. You can say, do I want that celery stock to grow? Do I want to have the gift that keeps on giving? And you affirm that in yourself through your, you know, through your emotions. You go, yes, I want that. And then the dreaming mind and the thing that it's connected into, the deeper thing that's creating our reality, says, good, okay. But if you said, no, I'm not really ready for this, then, you know, then, yeah, then you don't get it and you go into the future. So thank you, Wendy, and thank you, everyone. Thank you. Dreamschool.net. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. And remember, life is just a dream, sweetheart. It isn't so serious if you step back and say, check your emotion. Till next time, stay curious and positive. See ya.